the Senate passes a disaster relief bill that includes money for Alaska fishermen, but it may die in the House. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, December 28th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, state reaction to the announced departure of the head of the EPA.
We'll be looking forward to seeing who the new head of the EPA is and try and engage with them on areas of mutual interest to try and get Alaska and the country producing energy.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com. Enroll now and get a career in less than a year in refrigeration, marine oiler, heavy equipment, or welding. Additional training programs and course information online at avtech.edu. Classes in Seward and Anchorage start in January. This message sponsored by Avtech.
The Senate passed a disaster relief bill today. Included is money for fishery disasters across the country. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, subsistence and commercial fishermen won't get any money soon because the House is unlikely to take up the bill.
The House is out of session until Sunday, and there is no word on just what it will vote on yet. The lower chamber has not produced its own relief bill. Without the time to craft one, it could just pick up the Senate's $60 billion version. Senator Mark Begich does not expect that to happen.
The House doesn't want to make sure that there's disaster money relief for folks not only in New York and New Jersey, which have huge needs right now in the middle of their winter, and in our state and others who have disasters. That's a choice they're going to make over there. I think it would be a big mistake.
A big mistake that would force both the House and Senate to start over when the new Congress convenes January 3rd. Earlier in the day, the Senate rejected an amendment from Republican Tom Coburn. It would have stripped any fishery disaster money that wasn't within 50 miles of Hurricane Sandy. Another failed amendment won the support of Senator Lisa Murkowski that would have pared the overall bill back, including stripping out the fishery money. Still, she voted to pass the final bill with $150 million of fishery aid for the country.
So what, you're going to put one disaster ahead of all other disasters, drought, fire, fish disasters as we've seen in Alaska?
Senator Murkowski says she has no idea what the Republican-controlled House will do when it returns.
They're gone to the winds as far as I can tell. Nobody around here.
Neither the Senate nor the House is in session Saturday. Both are in Sunday, with last-minute fiscal cliff negotiations expected to take center stage. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lisa Jackson announced yesterday that she will step down early next year. The Parnell administration has frequently been at odds with the EPA, and yesterday, State Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan says he's hopeful her replacement will be someone the state can work with.
You know, one of the things that we've tried to do throughout the Obama administration is engage with the Obama administration. So I think we'll be looking forward to seeing who the new head of the EPA is and try and engage with them on areas of mutual interest to try and get Alaska and the country producing energy.
Sullivan cited the EPA's balking at a ConocoPhillips bridge across the Colville Delta as one of the areas where Jackson's agency got in the way and seemed out of touch with Alaska realities. He also mentioned the zones where sulfur fuel standards have been imposed for large shipping vessels. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she isn't sure who should replace her. Senator Murkowski is the top Republican on the Energy Committee. She says there are some names being floated to replace Jackson she would oppose, like Mary Nichols, who heads California's Air Resources Board. That state recently instituted its own cap and trade market. Senator Murkowski says two internal candidates who have already gone through Senate confirmation would have an easier time, Assistant Administrator for Air and Radiation Gina McCarty and Deputy Administrator Bob Perciasepe. She said she would not commit to saying she's comfortable with anyone just yet.
Obviously, EPA has huge impact on our operations up north, and we want to make sure that we've got somebody as head of that agency that we can actually deal with and that we think actually listens.
Senator Murkowski says it's not in anyone's interest to prevent complete nomination of the administrator and that keeping Jackson's replacement in acting status would hurt the agency. A divided Alaska Supreme Court has ordered the state's redistricting plan be redrawn for the 2014 elections. The court had allowed for an interim plan to be used for this year's elections, but in a decision released today, the court found the board did not follow the process it was instructed to follow. That process called for the board to design a plan focusing on state constitutional requirements, then determine if that plan complies with federal law. Justice Dana Fabe and Senior Justice Warren Matthews, who was sitting by assignment, dissented, saying they believed the board's approach was practical and reasonable. They noted the challenge facing the board in complying with both the federal and state constitutional requirements. Alaska is among the states required to submit redistricting plans or proposed election changes to the U.S. Justice Department for review to ensure the plans aren't discriminatory. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the advantage of non-human fishery observers.
And it doesn't care if you have to sit around and wait for weather. It doesn't have to be fed, doesn't have to be put up in a hotel, flown into towns.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net.
Problems continue for Shell Oil's mobile drilling rigs in Alaska waters. The tug towing the Kulik, which left Dutch Harbor last Friday, is having engine trouble in 20-foot seas about 50 miles south of Kodiak Island. Coast Guard spokesman David Mosley in Anchorage says the tug Avik began experiencing engine trouble late last night, but has enough power to maintain its position. Mosley said the vessels were 48 hours from any landfall had they gone adrift. The Kodiak-based cutter Alex Haley arrived on scene early this morning and is standing by to assist if the situation deteriorates. Two tugs, the Guardsman and the Nanook, are on their way from Seward and should have arrived early this afternoon. Engine troubles haven't been the only issue on this voyage. Earlier Thursday, the tow line between the Avik and Kulik snapped in rough seas, but Mosley says the crew was able to reestablish the tow. The other drill rig Shell leased this year has also had problems this summer. On its way back to Seattle, the Noble Discoverer was held by the Coast Guard in Seward until last week because of safety and pollution control issues. The hold was released on December 19th, but the rig is still in Seward. A major gear group is pushing back against rules set to take effect this January that will put human observers aboard some smaller fishing boats. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association has enlisted the help of the state's congressional delegation to try and delay implementation of the observer program for small boats and to adopt a more efficient electronic monitoring program instead. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The fisheries that take place in federal waters off of Alaska's coast have had onboard human monitors for years. The monitors provide critical data on the number and species of fish coming over the rail and are particularly important in counting bycatch, king salmon and halibut, for example, which are caught unintentionally by large trawlers dragging their nets for pollock. The North Pacific Fisheries Management Council voted to restructure the observer program 2 years ago, so fishermen have known that the halibut fleet and boats under 57.5 feet would be included beginning in 2013. Boats under 40 feet will be included a year after that. That's a lot of boats, about 1,300, which don't have a lot of room to spare for an extra person. The Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association has spent the past couple of years developing an alternative to an observer's eyes. Linda Benkin is the executive director of ALFA.
A camera, which is what electronic monitoring involves, is hooked up on a boat. When you start hauling gear, the camera turns on automatically, and it doesn't care if you have to sit around and wait for weather. It doesn't have to be fed, doesn't have to be put up in a hotel, flown into towns. Just gets the data the agency needed.
With funding from the National Fish and Wildlife Association, ALFA developed a pilot project to test the effectiveness of electronic monitoring on small boats in both Homer and in Sitka. Data analysts could successfully identify around 95% of the fish landed on the test boats. The daily cost of electronic monitoring was roughly half that of a human observer. Benkin says they've even accounted for the possibility that someone might try and game the system.
What we had always intended from the start was if someone purposely obstructs the view of the camera when they have a camera on their boat, they stand in front of it, they don't wipe the lens, if it gets splattered so the picture's not good, well then, your next trip you're going to get a human observer. So in a way, the human was the stick, and the electronic monitoring, to our view, was the carrot.
Despite the promising results from the 10 boats in the study, NOAA Fisheries this fall announced that it would be moving ahead with restructuring the observer program using its human model beginning January 1st. ALPHA sought and received the help of Alaska's congressional delegation. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich and Representative Don Young all signed a letter on December 10th to Rebecca Blank, acting Secretary of Commerce, asking NOAA to hold off on deploying human observers on the small boat fleet until an option for electronic monitoring is possible. All other aspects of the restructuring should move forward, including the 1.25% assessment on the fleet to pay for the program.
We understood that the long line, the sablefish halibut fleet, would be paying the lion's share of the cost of this restructured program. We would be paying 67% of the cost. And we were hesitant but willing to shoulder that burden if we could get two things. One, better coverage, where we have a lot of concerns about salmon and halibut bycatch. And two, a program that worked for the small fleet, namely electronic monitoring. And at this point, we're still shouldering that big lion's share of the cost. But to our mind, we haven't achieved either of those two goals.
Benkin says that because electronic monitoring seemed a likely course of action, the full costs of a human observer program were never fully assessed for the small boat fleet. And while this could be grounds for future litigation on the issue, she thinks there is an even stronger environmental case that observer coverage under the proposed restructuring plan is insufficient to protect stocks of halibut and black cod. Reporting in Sitka with help from Ed Ronco, I'm Robert Woolsey.
A small cruise line with ties to the conservation community in Southeast Alaska has filed a lawsuit over the Federal Fisheries Observer Program, saying that too many Chinook and halibut will go uncounted when new rules take effect in January. The boat company filed documents in Alaska District Court on December 21st, challenging the restructured monitoring program developed by NIMFS. In a news release issued yesterday, boat company president Hunter McIntosh states fishery stakeholders expected that the restructured program would improve coverage of fisheries that remove the largest volumes of halibut and Chinook salmon as bycatch. Instead, NIMFS developed an expensive and inefficient program that diverts observer coverage from trawl vessels to smaller vessels that use lower impact selective fishing gear. A huge commercial fishing vessel currently under construction has received an award that recognizes its unique and innovative design. As KDLG's Mike Mason reports, the vessel has ties to the Bristol Bay region.
The massive longline vessel will be called the Northern Leader, and it's owned by Alaskan Leader Fisheries. The company is half-owned by the Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation. The Northern Leader will be 184 feet in length and will be the first Z-Drive diesel-electric fishing vessel ever produced. Jensen Maritime was honored last month during Pacific Marine Expo with the New Wave Award from National Fisherman and Workboat Magazines. The award is for Jensen Maritime's vision and innovation for the concept and design of the Northern Leader. Jensen Maritime is based in Seattle and is the naval architecture and maritime engineering firm for the Crowley Maritime Corporation. The Northern Leader will be a substantial vessel, 184 feet in length, 42 feet wide, and it'll have a depth of over 18 feet. The plan is to use the vessel in the longline fisheries in the Bering Sea. The design of the vessel is anticipated to allow for lower emissions and higher fuel efficiency while still boasting the ability to hold over 1.8 million pounds of frozen product. The Northern Leader is currently being built in Tacoma, Washington. The vessel is scheduled to be ready to go and delivered to its home port in Kodiak in April of next year. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Calista Corporation says it has created a new subsidiary to provide engineering, energy, and environmental consulting services. E3 Environmental LLC is based in Anchorage. E3 Environmental President Christine Klein says the subsidiary offers services that include regulatory analysis, project planning, stakeholder engagement, compliance management, and agency consultation and coordination. Klein is Calista's Chief Operating Officer. Calista is the Alaska Native Corporation for the Bethel region. It has more than 12,000 shareholders.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. You have the power to help others when you file online for your PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. You can make a real difference and support causes that matter most to you, from feeding the hungry, supporting youth in education, or sustaining the arts. Learn more at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by ExxonMobil, North Rim Bank, and Doyon Limited.
Usually on Fridays at this time, you'd be hearing the start of our AK segment. But over the last 2 days, we've been airing the story of a family dealing with a 50-year-old secret. And today, instead of AK, we're bringing you the conclusion of that story. Last year, everything Bill Popp thought he knew about his family changed. He found out he had a younger sister who his mom had to give up for adoption. In the first two stories in this series, we heard why that family secret existed and how it was eventually revealed. In this final story, Anchorage Daily News columnist Julia O'Malley describes how the family was reunited again after 50 years.
Brandy Miller came home from work to find a message from an unfamiliar voice on her phone. It was a woman with the state of Wyoming, where Brandy grew up. The call wasn't a legal matter, the woman said, nothing to worry about, but she needed Brandy to call her back.
So when I got home from work, I called her back, and she verified who I was, you know, is this Lorella Miller, and she said, do you know that you're adopted? And I got real quiet for a second and said, well, yeah, why? And she says, well, I am actually contacting you on behalf of your birth mother. And I dropped my phone.
Brandy grew up with a brother who was also adopted in Casper, Wyoming. Brandy's mother had passed away a decade before. She was in regular contact with her father, who lived in Nevada. Growing up, her parents always said that her biological mother gave them a gift. Brandy was happy with the family she had. She never tried to find her birth mother.
To me, it was like that would be a ghost coming back out of her past, and I didn't want to go back and turn her life upside down if her family didn't know about the choice that she had made and didn't know about me.
Brandy says beneath that was fear. She had a cousin who tracked down a birth mother at 18. It had gone very wrong. What if she found her mother and her mother didn't want to have anything to do with her? It would be too painful to bear. But now her mother was searching for her. Right away, Brandy knew she wanted to be found. The confidential intermediary from Wyoming said she'd provide Brandy with her birth mother's number in 2 weeks.
So then, of course, all of the things that had been in the back of my mind came to the forefront for that 2 weeks.
What were those things?
Do I have any brothers and sisters? Is my mother married? Does she know where my father is? All of those questions, you know, is she tall like I am? Am I going to look anything like her? Are we going to like each other?
2 weeks later, when the number arrived, Brandy made herself a glass of iced tea, sat on her couch, and dialed. Thousands of miles away, in Mary Lou Pop's apartment off Fireweed Lane in Anchorage, the phone rang.
4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I received this telephone call. And she said, are you Mary Lou Pop? And I said, yes. She says, my name is Brandy Miller. And I think, and I said, you're my daughter.
The next question Brandy asked was why. Mary Lou told her the story. She told her that she never wanted to give her up and that she thought of her every day afterwards. They talked for an hour. Brandy says she didn't feel angry about what happened all those years ago, but she felt sad for what Mary Lou went through. Brandy says she's grateful her life turned out the way it did.
She didn't have to do what she did. She could have gotten rid of me. She didn't have to make the choices that she made. And I had a wonderful life growing up. Wonderful life. And I give her credit for that.
Brandy found out she had an older brother, Bill, and two younger half-siblings, Jeff and Kristen. And soon after she hung up the phone with Mary Lou, Jeff, Kristen, and Bill arrived at Mary Lou's apartment. Jeff and Kristen took turns talking to her first. Bill waited and listened.
I was having a full-blown panic attack. What the hell am I going to say to her? What do you say to a sister that you never knew existed? And, you know, and I'm listening to them, and he's hitting it off, and she's hitting it off, and I'm just scared spitless. So Kristen's wrapping up, and I'm really getting short of breath, and then she hands me the phone, and I finally just said, "Hi, I'm your big brother, Bill."
Less than 2 weeks later, Brandy got on a flight to Anchorage. As the plane taxied in, she felt sick with nerves. She walked down the terminal and passed through the arrival gate. Brandy had never met the people who rose to greet her, but she says their faces were familiar.
Well, I walked around the corner and they were all standing there, and Jeff was standing there in front. And I walked away from my suitcase and he put his arms out and put his arms around me and gave me a big hug. And the first thing he said to me was, "Don't get snot and mascara on my coat." And I started to laugh, and I said, "You lose, I'm not wearing any." And so we giggled and laughed, and then I walked over and hugged my mother, and just, it was an amazing feeling. And then Kristen was standing there, and I didn't have a sister that I knew, and stood there and just hung on to my sister, and it was an amazing feeling. And then hugging Bill, that was amazing.
How come?
Because he's my brother. And it was just, it was like going home.
They went to Bill's house. Being adopted, Brandy had given plenty of thought to the way that nature and nurture shape a person. As she settled into the family room with her biological siblings, she realized that nature had far more influence than she thought.
It's funny, it's like the three of them are just each little pieces of me. Bill is very stoic and he's the strong one, and I can be that way if I need to be. And then there's Jeff, who is just, I don't know if you've met Jeff or not, but he's a nut. He's a nut. And I have the same sense of humor as Jeff. And Kristen and I finish each other's sentences, and it just was, it was really amazing how comfortable it was, how quickly.
Her siblings feel the same way.
It was like she'd never been gone. It was just surreal. I mean, it was like, well, there's Brandy. Mm-hmm. Good to see her again.
And then there was Mary Lou. When Brandy looked at her, it was like looking in a mirror. They were both tall. Their faces had the same shape. There was something familiar in the way they moved. For Mary Lou, meeting Brandy brought relief from worry that she'd carried for 50 years.
Oh, I love her. I love her to death. We started out on the basis of Brandy and Mary Lou. One night she called me, and she said, Mom, would it be all right, Mary Lou, if I called you Mom? And I thought, God, you don't know how all right it would be.
A few days into her visit, Bill showed Brandy an album of family photographs. One of them caught her attention. It was Bill's wedding picture from 1979. Bill and his wife Nicole stood on the altar at a church. Bill's grandparents, Mary Lou's mother and father, stood to their left. The photo jogged loose a long-forgotten scene from Brandy's past. She'd met that older couple before.
All I could do was sit there and stare at it, because I knew who they were.
When Brandy was in high school, she spent summers with a friend on a sheep ranch. It was located in Buffalo, Wyoming. That's where Mary Lou grew up. The wedding photos sparked a memory of a summer day when Brandy was 15 or 16. Brandy attended a picnic in Buffalo. It was a 50th wedding anniversary celebration for an older ranch couple, Ray and Dorothy Hiraman. She remembered meeting them clearly because the meeting had been so strange.
This woman was standing there and I was introduced to her, and she turned white as a sheet, took a couple of steps backwards, and then a man stepped up behind her and he did the same thing. He just got really white and took a step backward and refused to shake my hand. I reached out my hand and he would not shake my hand.
The couple, the guests of honor, were her grandparents. She had no way of knowing that, but looking back, she's sure they recognized her. Brandy says at that age, she and her mother looked nearly identical. Shortly after the couple left the party, everyone assumed they were sick. When Brandy told Bill that story, he went quiet. He'd been in Buffalo that summer, too. His family had come to celebrate their grandparents' anniversary. It's almost certain they crossed paths somewhere in that town. He couldn't stop thinking about the idea his grandparents knew his sister was there, but they never let on.
And so for 2 weeks, we're there in Buffalo. We're not more than a mile and a half away from Brandy. And our grandparents knew that she was there, could have told us, and didn't. And of all the things that I am angry about out of this whole thing, that is the one thing I am the most angry about. It's not a lot of things I'm angry about, but that one really hurts.
And as the siblings talked, they realized that wasn't the only time Brandy had been near her biological family. For a time, Kristen's family had been stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado Springs. Brandy figures they lived maybe 10 blocks apart.
The only thing I can figure is Mom and I were talking about it the other night, and it just wasn't time. It must not have been the right time for us to be together, for us to all be that close that many times. There had to be a reason why we didn't know who each other were.
Brandy asked Mary Lou what she knew about John Lockhart, Brandy's biological father. Mary Lou says the last time she saw John was in Gillette, Wyoming, shortly after Brandy was born. She was with Bill. John passed them on the street.
John walked by, and he looked down at Bill, never acknowledged me, never acknowledged Bill, just kept on walking. So I thought, that's the way it's going to be. You just keep on walking, buddy.
Later on, Brandy typed John Lockhart into Google. An obituary appeared. He'd died in 2003. He'd retired from a career as a truck driver and lived in Texas, it said. At the bottom of the obituary was a list of survivors, including one son, Patrick. Another brother.
That was Anchorage Daily News columnist Julia O'Malley. This story is a collaboration with the Anchorage Daily News. To see pictures of the Pop family and hear the full story, including a postscript about the missing brother, go to our website, alaskapublic.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Mike Mason in Dillingham, and Julia O'Malley in Anchorage. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.